You're used to dangerous territory, right? Like, your new book is called The Combat Doctor. The name speaks for itself. Obviously, you've seen your fair share of true danger, danger that most of us, thankfully, could never possibly fathom, Dan.
Yeah, it was an interesting time, certainly. So that whole period when we were on high rotation in Afghanistan, and then that I guess privileged position of being a doctor with Special Forces elements that was afforded that opportunity to go forward into the combat environment, and so it was very unique, very interesting, but somewhat high pressure with hindsight, and slightly traumatic.
Is it anything like we see on TV with MASH? I'm not talking the comedy side of things, but that's the only experience we've had of that sort of trauma on TV.
Look, in all seriousness, and the comedy side is there, which sounds morose, but I mean, black humour is just such a great coping mechanism, or humour in general, for those to try and diffuse some of those high pressure scenarios, and particularly the medical trauma side of things. So, you know, it's not too far removed from the MASH scenes, would you believe? But and certainly, I mean, in MASH, there was that human element, and that I think it came through, it shone through, aside from the humour, just the magnitude of that human experience being around war trauma. And so, yeah, look, it's not as silly a parallels with the MASH as you might think.
Now, Dan, I follow you on Instagram, and I've seen some of the things, very, very tiny amount of things that you've no doubt seen in your combat experience, brutal things. Like, how are you able to, I guess, put that to one side and then go home and be a family man and, you know, and a dad? And how can you put that to one side? Because I know you speak a lot about resilience. So does that come from a place of resilience or something else?
Look, I think it does. And I think it's certainly not unique to military people. This is all of our first responders, our ambulance officers, our police officers, fire officers. And it's all of these people that work in these really sort of unusual environments where you get exposed to the sort of traumas that the average person, thankfully, in Australia doesn't get exposed to. And look, it's a good question. There's a degree of switching on and off, so compartmentalising what happens at work and then what happens at home. But I think for the most part, it's really challenging to do when those lines blur. And I know that all of our first responders, you know, generally struggle a little bit with this, just for the simple fact that they're such different worlds. They have such different experiences and exposures. And I think, unfortunately, the mental health statistics around first responders are pretty damning.
Horrendous.
And I think that's the case, you know, and it's something that I'm pretty passionate about, and hopefully through in the resilience space, hopefully adding to that narrative to try and do better for that first response community.
Dan, what draws someone to combat medicine as opposed to, you know, being a GP in a suburban clinic?
I think there was a lot of factors. I did my medical schooling on an Army scholarship, so I was already on a trajectory to be a doctor with the Army. And then I had my eyes opened to special operations. My brother, who had gone into the Army ahead of me at the time when I was at medical school, he had done selection and joined the Special Air Service Regiment.
Wow.
And so I got this glimpse into this world, and they had worked out, well, I was sort of informed that they had a doctor with the SAS Regiment, and then all of a sudden it's for me, seemed to be this great thing to aspire to do my medical training, to train up, do selection for the SAS and have those things come together. And so I think as a young man, it appealed to me it seemed exciting. And it was, it absolutely was. It seemed like a great ambitious goal to do SAS selection and to become a doc. And so it just all sort of fell into place for me to be this really ambitious life goal that I set my sights on, and thankfully the stars aligned and it happened.
And we know that the SAS selection course is no mean feat. I mean, they often take 130 odd people and put them through the course, and very few of them actually make it through. To think that you would undertake that as well as medical training, which is no joke, you sort of must be a very determined sort of character. You must have some strength that you find from somewhere, Dr. Dan.
Yeah, look, it's certainly the, and we use the mantra in the book that I actually co-wrote with my brother and another SAS veteran, Tim Curtis, called The Resilient Shield. We use the mantra always a little further, and I think that's such a powerful one. It's just the power of persistence and these kind of ambitious life goals. And I think I got this from my dad. He always instilled in my brother and I that if someone can do something, then you probably can as well. You know, if it's doable, then it ain't going to be easy, and you need to log the hours. But that power of persistence, it's incredible what we can achieve if we really set our sights to it. And thankfully, I seem to have been wired in a fashion that allows me to pursue these long-term ambitious goals and not get deterred for whatever reason.
Now, The Combat Doctor is your third book, so there's The Average 70 Kilo Dickhead, which I love the name
What's
of,
that
by
one
the
about?
Way. What is that one about? Tell us about that one, and we'll get back to The Combat Doctor. Tell Bill Coe about that one.
Yeah, I started writing The Combat Doctor many years ago, so I'd just started, and it was actually as a bit of a cathartic exercise to make sense of events from my second tour of Afghanistan with Special Operations. And on that tour, we lost three task group members, and I'd responded to all of these guys, teammates of mine, and couldn't save them. And so I was processing this information, trying to make sense of it. I was pretty wound up when I got home, and the psychologist who I saw for my post-operational debrief recommended I started writing things down to try and organise my thoughts. So that kicked off my interest in writing. I found it hugely cathartic and a very enjoyable experience. And so I started writing, and I captured a bunch of this sort of stuff for cathartic purposes. Then when I got out of the army, I revisited some of this and started to look at what lessons learned can I pull out of my experience in the military. And I put a few of them together in that book, Average 70 Kilo Dickhead, which story.
It's clever. It made me stop. It did. The name of it alone made me stop. And I was like, I like that.
Well, I'm working on a book called 100 Kilo Wanker, so that'll be my
I'll buy that. Yeah, let me put you in touch with that.
Thank you.
it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, the story behind the titles in the first chapter, but it's basically, I mean, that's me. I came from an average middle-class Australian family. I'm 70 kilos, dripping wet, and I'm a bit of a dickhead. And my wife would tell you that I'm...
A bigger bit.
Full-time dickhead. but it's designed to talk to that fact that, you don't need to be 2 meters tall. You don't need to be sort of a meter across the shoulders type thing to do these things. You don't need to be the smartest kid in school to get into medicine. You don't need to be the strongest guy to get into the SAS. And this was, it was trying to capture some of those lessons learned in a really, hopefully, humorous type sort of format. And so that was that book, and then got sidetracked with Resilient Shield. And then it just, all these years later, it was the right time, I felt, to come back to Combat Doctor, having been out of the army for 8 years and being able to view these experiences that happened over a decade ago now through a very different light, being sort of integrated back into civilian society, family life, and having a look at that whole package of training up, getting into the army, getting into the SAS, going to war with them, having these experiences, then discharging and reintegrating. It seemed the right time to put that story out there.
It seems to me that getting out of the army can sometimes be just as, if not more, difficult than getting into the army.
Look, you're exactly right, Jade. That whole transition process, and I think it's underestimated by a lot of transitioning veterans, myself included, and it's not just the army. I mean, this once again is our police officers, our ambulance officers, anyone mm-hmm. who's worked in our professional sporting people, anyone who's worked in these high-functioning, often elite sort of teams and been a part of that tribe, if you like, and their identity is the person within that tribe. They've got purpose, and they've got this visceral sense of oneness. They're united with this group, And I think that does get amplified in militaries, particularly if you have these really intense experiences, as we did in places like Afghanistan. then that when you unplug from that, you lose your identity. You don't know who you are. You're back as a civilian, whereas you had been military. So it's this massive change. I found that I lost my purpose. I really, everything that I loved and was fueling my self-esteem with hindsight was linked to the military. It was linked to that uniform. And when I took that uniform off, it was gone.
Gone, yeah.
Try and work out who I was, build a new identity, a new purpose, a new tribe. And it's a real struggle, and this is what our veterans face.
That's amazing. The book is called The Combat Doctor. The author is the very fabulous Dr. Dan Pronk. We will see you on SAS Australia. We will read the book with bated breath, and we congratulate you on what is no doubt a very powerful telling of your experience. Thank you so much, Dr. Dan.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.